Blog Talk Radio.
Spot where we can kick it. Spot where we belong. That's just for us. You ain't gotta get all dressed up and be Hollywood. You know what I mean? Where the f*** go when we die? Ain't no heaven for a thug. That's why we go to Thug Mansion. That's the only place where thugs getting free, and you gotta be a G. At Thug Mansion. A place to spend my quiet night. Time to unwind. So much pressure in this life of mine. Our quiet times I once contemplated. And with a tribe, but when I held that, all I could see was my mama's eyes. No one knows my struggle, they only see the trouble. Not knowing it's hard to carry on when no one loves you. Picture me inside the misery of poverty. No man alive has ever witnessed struggles I survived. Praying hard for better days, promise to hold on. Me and my dogs ain't have a choice but to roll on. We found a finally spot to kick it, where we could drink liquor and know what bickers over trick. A spot where we can peace. And even though we G's, we still visualize places that we can roll a piece. And in my mind's eye, I see this place, the players going fast. I got a spot for us all, so we can ball at Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy. Little hands sweet, big bang cool. Every hour, cause it's all good. Leave all the stress from the world outside.
A place where death doesn't reside, just thugs who collide, not to start beef. No cops rolling by, no policemen, no homicide, no chalk in the streets, no reason for nobody's mama to cry. See, I'm a good guy, I'm trying to stick around for my daughter. But if I should die, I know all of my album supporter. This whole year's been crazy, ask the Holy Spirit to save me. Only difference from me and Ozzy Davis, gray hair maybe. Cause I feel like my eyes saw too much suffering. I'm just 20 some odd years, I done lost my mother and I cry tears of joy. I know she smiles on a boy, I dream of you more. My love goes to Afeni Shakur, cause like Ann Jones, she raised the ghetto king in a war, and just for that alone she shouldn't feel no pain no more. Cause one day we'll all be together sipping heavenly champagne where angels soar with golden rings and Thug Mansion.
Every corner, every city, there's a place where life's a little easy. Little pen and sweet, we back and cool. Every hour, cause it's all good. Stress from the world outside. Every wrong done will be alright. Nothing but peace, love, and street passion.
Mama, don't cry, your baby boy's doing good. Tell the homies I'm in heaven and they ain't got hood. Seen a show with Marvin Gaye last night. It had me shook, dripping peppermint snot with Jackie Wilson and Sam Cooke. Then some lady named Billie Holiday sang, sitting there kicking it with Malcolm till the day came. Little Natasha show grown, tell a lady in the liquor store that she's forgiven. So come home, maybe in time you understand. Only God can save us when Miles Davis cutting loose with the band. To think all the people that you knew in the past that passed on, they in heaven found peace at last. Picture a place that they
trouble, double, double, trouble, double, double, double.
To come rose and tell me to come. So she didn't have a daughter, she didn't have a son. She said the list doesn't run, run up the stairs and come. And if it don't come quick, you're not gonna know that son. So I grab a bunch of rose and I started to run. Here I come, whoa. 2 months later she said come and get your son. Cause I don't want your baby to come tie me down. Now because you are old and I am young. Yes, while I'm young, yes I wanna have some fun. Run me down, shouldly waddle. She did have a son. She said the lift doesn't run. Run up the stairs and come. And if it don't come quick, you're not gonna see your son. So I grab a bunch of clothes and I started to run. Here I come. Here I come. 2 months later, she said. want your baby to come. Time is young, I got you, I old, and I am young. Just while I'm young, yes, I wanna have some fun, run me down. Diddly wop, boom, boodly diddly, whoa, swing. Exercise, exercise, exercise them thighs way. Extra broad, extra broad, extra broader than Broadway. And the intercom rolls, they tell me to come. But she didn't have a dot, but she did have a son. Here I come. Cause I'm broad, I'm broad, I'm broader than Broadway. Yes, I'm broad, I'm broad, I'm broader than Broadway. Over the ocean and over the sea, all of the girls and my folks, we, we. Shoot-a-ra-de-de-de-de-de-de-whoa. I know intercom rose, they tell me to come. But she didn't have a daughter, she did have a son. Doesn't work, run up the stairs and come. Cause if you don't come quick, you're not gonna see your son. So I grab a bunch of clothes and I start to run. Here I come, here I come. 2 months later, she said, come and get your son. Cause I don't want your baby to come tie me down. I got you, I'm old, and I am young. Yes, while I'm young, yes, I wanna have some fun. Run me down, shoodily rap, boo, boodily diddle, whoa, swing. Cause I'm broad, I'm broad.
The whole liberation of oppressed people in the United States has to do not with climbing up some ladder to success, not for asking to be just like Rockefeller or just like DuPont or just like Ford, because that would only continue the oppression and exploitation of oppressed people in the United States, and specifically African people born and raised in the United States. Socialism is an integral part of building social justice on this planet. The condition of my people, my history, was very much connected with other oppressed people, and I began to see that the same foot that was on the necks of the Vietnamese people, that was on the necks of all oppressed people on the planet, was the same foot that was on my neck. And so I began to understand that imperialism has to go. It is a poison that is killing people all over this world. The priorities of this planet have to be completely changed. And instead of profits, instead of policies that destroy the earth, that destroy the water, that destroy human beings, I believe a policy that protects people, that makes people live in a community, a world community, that's what I believe. That's my basic political commitment at this moment.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and your engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communication, Sister Amina, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, Asada Shakur, still warning after 50 years. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chairman, People's Political Party, Nat Turner. Black power, comrade. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Brother, right on. Black power.
Black power.
Right on. Yes, sir. I'm glad to be doing this show tonight on such an extraordinary person. Not only Was she an extraordinary black woman? But she was an extraordinary woman. I'm saying straight up ditto on that. You know, man, it's so much. Try to do my best. Just in thought. Comes to mind, you know, like immediately the way we've been structured in terms of like our history, like to tell our story in this decadent country that claims to be a democracy, you know, to everybody else around the world. And other nations around the world are claiming to be regimes and dictatorships. It is a very fact. It is a very reason why Joanne Chesimard became a side of Olubala Shakur. Because of the same claims that America, this government, had been labeling other countries. For the simple fact that the countries stood up and were not afraid to take a stand against American imperialism, American decadence, American white supremacy, Eurocentric so-called values. You know, Eurocentric values are totally juxtaposed to black and brown indigenous people, the non-whites of the planet who are the majority of people on this earth. You know, no bones, as a matter of fact, in a little over a month, as a matter of fact, July 16th. And I initially wanted to do a show around her birthday, I'm saying, but it just dawned on me. It's a 50-year thing that's here, May 2nd, 1973, is when the attempt to snatch her life from her family because of who she was and still is and what she stood for, no different. And I'll never be able to say this enough. And that's only due to the colonized mind in order to deconstruct the colonialized mind. You know, so for now, you know, we continue to use George Washington as an example of a male version of Olubala Shakur. And he got celebrated for it on his George Washington Day and whatnot. We have a Olubala Shakur Day in a sense today. You know, the state picks and chooses or makes itself the proprietor of Black History Month, what have you, or the acknowledgement of famous black women or strong black women, you know, the usual thing, you know, that's projected into our girls, you know. So we're not having that shit, you know, that lopsidedness, that, you know, control factor, the social engineering. It's simply about an attitude, you know. It's simply about attitude. Just, you know, the same attitude, like, you know, for instance, when white people get harmed, in a sense, you know, there's a natural response in terms of an attitude. And let's, you know, understand this clearly. You know, the thing that comes to mind is like 9/11, right? And all those white people that lost their lives in those buildings, because, you know, the majority of people that worked in those buildings, you know were not black people. And so that was sort of like in that sub kind of like, you know, even though they may say this America came under attack, but in that subconscious, you know, it was white blood that was shed. You know what I'm saying? So a response as a result of that. And that response was on a larger scale, the war against Iraq, you know, so who were considered non-whites, you know what I'm saying? So, but it was the attitude, you know, the vehemency, you know, the attitude, the rage, the anger, you know, the hurt and whatnot, right? So we say that to, like, give an idea, like, what black people been through far worse, you know, for, like, 5 centuries, like 500 years on this side of the planet. I know, you know, we've been shaped, you know, they think of 1619, you know, was Jamestown or some shit or whatever, you know. But the natural response to terrorism, in this case, white terror, and what I mean by white terror in its various forms. Of course, the Europeans have placed a monopoly or made a great effort to put a monopoly on what terrorism is. So they could be the good guys that's fighting against terrorism, the so-called war against terrorism, war against terror. That war against terror is nothing but a response to a bigger picture, to a much more vicious campaign on the part of imperialists, but shaped in a way that it's become so sophisticated, so masked in a sense. Like, you know, like, you know, Europeans go to these mask parties with it, wear a little mask over their face, and, you know, the whole thing behind that, you know, not to be identified and whatnot, you know, so readily, so easily, whatever. But, you know, to mask this thing, and then, you know, to make the victim the, you know, the perpetrator, and the perpetrator, you know, the victimized. This is what Assad Shakur was experiencing, and what she saw her people was going through. There's an autobiography that was published, and I recommend, man, everybody, you know, read that book. Feel that black women, every black woman in this country ought to read her autobiography, just black women in general, or just black women collectively, you know, the experience of a girl growing up, you know, in a society, and, you know, that rubs off on her, that moved her, that induced her, that intoxicated her to join a revolutionary organization, you know, the Black Panther Party, you know, 1968. But, you know, at 47, you know, she was born as Joanne Chesimard, and that name will be forever etched into the psyche of the white male, historically. In so-called law enforcement, in his various agency of being a protective apparatus of the capitalist system under which we are held captive, economically, socially, politically, in a religious nature, in terms of being a control factor. But they will never refer to her as Assad Shakur, you know, right out of the gate. It will be conceding defeat psychologically. And this is real deep, man. The psychological implications of it all, and so much so, it bears fruit. You know, it bears itself out. You know, it jumps out. You know, it's crying out, so to speak. And the reason why I say that and understand it, because there's $1 million bounty that was placed on her head. And the 40-year anniversary, or the 40-year of the incident having taken place, 1973, May 2nd, on the New Jersey Turnpike, in the wee hours of the morning, you know, they were pulled over by Pig Forster and his partner for a broken tail light. And as she explains in a flash, you know, she was being shot. No. She, two other comrades were Sundiata Kohli, who was captured shortly after. I didn't say arrested, who was captured shortly after. No different than when the Vietnamese was capturing U.S. soldiers in Vietnam in a war that became a war of attrition, an unorthodox war, a guerrilla campaign that the Vietnamese had waged against the imperialist American faction of European imperialism. Matter of fact, coming to the defense of their French comrades who had owned international possessions, colonies, landed holdings, and whatnot. And their struggle, their war, and they captured what America still today referred to as POWs. And Sundiata was captured and became a POW, you know, prisoner of war, a political prisoner, conscious. And had served, had been 40-something years, you know, 40-something, 50 years. And in recent time had been unleashed, former political prisoner, prisoner of war, prisoner of conscience. The other comrade, we won't take this comrade term lightly. In every sense of the word, you know, they were comrades, and it's an honor, you know, to be able to, follow in their footsteps as far as that time goes and understand it, you know, what it is, what it means. You know, they gave example of what that is. And Zaid Shakur, other comrade, was shot and murdered. What we would say is political murder, an extension of the arm of the state, as we know the police, the so-called police. She had been taken to the hospital, shot twice. One of those in the arm, and to my understanding, my knowledge, in such a way that her arm was partially severed, you know. And, you know, the whole story of it, the investigation of it, as a matter of fact, there's a, some investigator, whatever, to this day, you know, 50 years, when he talks about when you got to the scene, and he saw Sada Shakur screaming in pain, you know, not too far from the what they refer to as an abandoned car, you know. But and some other things not that I remember, some things that really stick out in my mind, but. You know, the 40-year anniversary of it, they placed her on this most wanted terrorism list now. Now, all of a sudden, she's a terrorist, you know. And that's for political reasons. That's for, for one, it's a psych job, you know, it's a psychological warfare to further escalate the imagery of a status quo in the psyche of the so-called American conscience. You know, now, you know, white people can call her a terrorist, you know, white youth, whatever. You know, white women who live in suburbia can refer to us as terrorists. The same thing, you know, they've done other non-whites. Zacharias Moussaoui, who was kidnapped, became a terrorist. A lot of these other Arab-speaking people or so-called Arabs from the so-called Arab world, the so-called Middle East, which was made up, and they were being kidnapped, you know, illegally, you know, and turned into terrorists. And so, you know, the whole concept, the whole strategy, tactic, and this is similar. This is what's been done to Assad Shakur, you know, 40 years. And it's almost like some type of paying homage to Peg Foster. You know, she's convicted of first-degree murder and given life plus 33 years in 1977. And 2 years later, she was liberated from Clinton concentration camp in New Jersey and surfaced a while later in Cuba, where she still remains today. As a, you know, victim of the war that's been carried out against the black collective, the black masses. Now, you know, there are others who may be listening or may be problematic, but one thing that we, you know, try to make it the goal, the objective, you know, is to take our minds back, you know, from the state, you know, take our minds back from the orthodox European way of viewing things, you know. We taking our minds back and being able to think for ourselves, being able to look at experiences of things that are taking place and going back as before, you know, when we internalize how something was presented to us and we internalize it and we went with it. So now we can go back now and take a look at Assad Shakur and other black figures that we didn't have before, and come forward with our own minds, see it in our own ways, give it our labeling, our expression, our terms, you know, the verbs we use, you know, the enemy, you know, and whatnot, the attacks on black men today, you know, it's a war against black men, you know, an extension of the war out of the 60s, an extension of the war that came as a result of so-called Jim Crow reconstruction into Jim Crow, rather, you know, an extension of that and an extension of the war that was carried out against black people, but with some differences due to the fact that black men then abolition of physical slavery, we had value. Because we had to be the SOL, the source of labor for the capitalists, the white racist capitalists. So it's a connected line here. It's no severed line. There's no broken line until we break that line, until we sever that line. And the only way we can sever that line is through our liberation struggle. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of us on some bullshit, you know, we still, some of us are old enough, who've still been under the spell of such slogans as "Keep Hope Alive" by Jesse Jackson, you know, which hasn't gotten us anywhere in terms of the ideology, the philosophy of it. But however, yes, we must stay hopeful, and none of this spook shit, you know, like hopefully somebody's gonna come back and rescue us, you know. No, we're hopeful that we can elevate ourselves consciously, politically, and transform the way we think collectively and liberate ourselves. You know, so, yeah, we have that type of hope, you know. Some of us may, you know, want to, you know, use their religious upbringing and, you know, the God that they know under the name that they know that one God, you know, and, you know, hope, you know, that the Lord be with us in whatever struggle we go through to get to that point. Where we no longer have to succumb to the Eurocentric view, the capitalist structure and whatnot, you know, the racism, the white supremacy, and all the bullshit in between, Republicans or Democrats or whatever, you know. Liberation is liberation, and there's no liberation without sacrifice. There's no liberation without casualties. And so Pig Forster and his buddy tried to turn Assad Shakur and other two comrades into casualties of war. And they succeeded in murdering Zayd Shakur, but failed in the other two attempts. And, of course, there will be those who will oppose this angle, and that's fine. We have a problem with it. It's natural. It's normal, you know. But we wanted to, you know, be clear on some things, you know, just to give some context to it, you know. But coming up as a girl, you know, and experiencing life as a girl and then a teenager. And, you know, she had you know, went to a college, you know, being, you know, in New York, you know, and the several experiences that had taken place that moved her, you know, at an early age, you know, to say that she wasn't having that shit, the treatment of black people, you know, in New York and, you know, other parts of the country. And so she didn't hesitate, you know, to become part of the Black Panther Party around 68 when, you know, a chapter was opened in New York. You know, we had chapter in Harlem, you know, Queens, you know, in the different boroughs, you know what I'm saying? And, of course, 68, 69, the assassination of Martin Luther King in 68. And those are monumental things in her psyche, in her mind. The same type of psyche that was ingrained in George, supposedly ingrained in George Washington's mind as a treatment. He claimed that George, King George, had been holding him under, you know, tyranny. And so his psyche, as a result of that, spun into something else, you know. And so it's no different. And of course, we could never speak about George Washington in that vein without making sure that our people know and understand that he was a hypocrite, because he was a slave owner, and he had the nerve and audacity to claim to be some aspect of form or some sense, a man of God, and that, you know, these self-evident truths and whatnot, you know, the bullshit, the rhetoric that went into the ink on the paper, the so-called Declaration of Independence and whatnot, you know. And so that was one of the results. It was one of the influences. And maybe about a year, over a year, around 1970-71, she had went underground. And it is a crucial period and a crucial time. Another factor that loomed big in her decision was the literal hunting down of Black Panther Party leaders, or those Black Panther Party figures who had the juice December 4th, 1969, the assassination, the government-backed assassination, political murder of Chairman Fred Hampton, National Deputy Chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, you know, and Defense Minister Mark Clark, 2336 West Monroe, the wee hours of the morning, you know, cold-blooded murder. And then a week or so, I think, later after that, the attack on the L.A. Office. That was pretty much manned by the great Geronimo Pratt, who had, due to his, you know, his background in the military, received all these different medals in the world, Purple Heart and other type of shit or whatever. And he used what the enemy had taught him. He used what he had learned in the military, how to survive and how to build a trench or how to stack up against an attack or how to defend your position or your fort or your whatever, and so it was because of him that they survived. And but it was his genius, and it was a coordinated effort. As a matter of fact, one of the pig heads who made the move, Cargo, son, he's also become a part of the move of the campaign in L.A., you know what I'm saying? And those are the deciding factors, that moved her, to go underground. And so she went underground in the evolution of what became known as the Black Liberation Army. There's a whole lot of, ramifications with that. It had a intricate sort of structure. I'm trying to get the words, but it was a like a diverse thing. That was the move on her part, And like I said, in this time, this ramped up attacks on the Black Panther Party, the revolutionary militant organizations or formations of groups, who made no qualms about defending themselves against police terror, as opposed to the Gandhiism on the part of King and the civil rights faction. The terrorism, in the urban so-called environment, as opposed to a different type of terrorism, so to speak, in rural areas, dealing with, the Ku Klux Klan. And of course, the Klan, the pig, the fireman, the milkman was all the same in a sense. The judge, what we mean by the state, the politician, the judge, the businessman, and the pig, and the police, will hand in glove a concerted effort, to keep the structure intact, the hierarchy intact. And this is what the Black Panther Party and the underground a faction of the movement, the liberation movement, saw as the enemy, and rightfully so, because they had done their homework. They were very clear on their position. She was very fluent in understanding what capitalism does to them. And we say that, not only, people are broke or being exploited, and that the rich and the poor gap is widening instead of closing. You take a look at it today, like right now as we speak, it's widening. And there's this revolutionary type way of increasing it. Their revolution is what? The revolution of technology and science, revolution, and the whole thing, currency and whatnot, algorithms and electronics and all types of backdoor things to enrich themselves. know, they exploit the masses of the people, keep the people in the conditions that they've always been in. You know, from Europe to America, it just became a racial factor as part of it. You know, on a part of the Europeans kidnapping African people, non-whites, and bringing them, you know, around the world by force and turning them into a beast of burden. And so this is what Assata Shakur, the Black Panther Party leadership members, as a result of being politically educated, politicized, have political education class, you know, and understand all these different isms and whatnot. And so, like I said before, you know, a lot of us may not be able to, articulate these isms or you know, like some of us, you know, saying we're a very small minority, but they feel it as worse as we do, you know, or you know, if not as worse. You know what I'm saying? They feel what we explain, and they feel, they know that it's real, and they know that somehow, some kind of way, that what we're saying is real shit, you know, facts, like the young people say, you know. So it's about tying in, you know, it's about connecting the pieces together, and this is what the, you know, Assata Shakur, that was her dedication. The love for her people, the liberation of her people from the wreckage of capitalism, you know, and, you know, what we term the socialist economy, like the duo Dead Prez, when they, in their rap songs, when they, you know, they explain some of these things, and they giving you scenarios and whatnot, you know. And we can look to Africa, you know, and acknowledge, you know, these parallels and what's being said, you know, because we've always been a collectivist people, you know. But as Assata Shakur, much hated, you know, because she didn't relent. You know, she wasn't one of the ones who was planning on being counted among the broken, like George Jackson has said, and they pushed me out of existence, but they'll never be able to say they count me among the broken. They'll never be able to say that they broke me, you know, sort of like buck breaking on a plantation and stuff like that, you know. In the Roots movie, you know, they portrayed us what George Jackson was saying, you know, his fortitude, you know, you know, with the scene when Kunta Kinte is being whipped, you know, the overseer is whipping Kunta Kinte with the whip until he breaks him down and finally gets him to say that his name is Toby. You know what I'm saying? But it makes a world of a difference if you say Assata Shakur as opposed to Joy and Chesimore. It makes a world of a difference, you know. She had been represented by legal counsel, of course, during, you know, this episode, you know, by her aunt, and she says that her aunt was very influential, you know. She had gotten pregnant and as a daughter, and to my understanding, her daughter now lives with her in Cuba, you know. And of course, the whole political ramifications with that, her liberation being whisked away to, you know, to Cuba. And of course, at that time, in the 60s, going into the 70s, you know, the Cuban government, the Cubans, had been through their cataclysm. You know, they had, you know, reached the mountaintop, you know, and in real time, and had come out from under the wretched conditions of the CIA-backed or government-backed Fulgencio Batista regime in Cuba, you know, and, you know, led chiefly by Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, who set out you know, in the Sierra Mesa Mountains in order, you know, to plan their liberation of the Cuban people. And so as a result of that, she was in a place that was considered the enemy, and that the Cubans were one of those countries, as I said earlier, you know, that did not relent to America's whims. The little small, tiny little island on the map, you know, did not relent. The embassy, you know, in these countries, you know, these countries trade ambassadors and the embassy built here and there. You know, so like, and, you know, it was a New Black Panther. When I was a New Black Panther Party, I experienced that in Canada, you know, over the government attempts to prevent me and several other members from, you know, going to London. And so we experienced this embassy shit, you know. And I say that, you know, just to give you like an idea. And so, you know, the State Department, you know, it's maneuver, it's diplomatic approach or whatnot to persuade the Cubans to turn the side of Chicot over to the United States government. And of course, it's like that. Cash is like, you know, in so many words, you know, give them the middle finger. You know, they were solid in their position. They were solid in their position. And of course, you know, Cuba is considered to be a communist, a socialist, country, island government, right? And Cuba was a sort of like had become a hotbed for Black Panther, Black Panthers who were to flee the country. You know, due to this, you know, this manhunt, you know, this hunting down of Black Panther Party members, because they had become, according to, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, you know, the number one threat, you know, to the national security of, you know, of this government here. You know what I'm saying? Some young brothers and sisters, picture that. Picture that. You know, some young brothers and sisters, you know, teenagers, a lot of them, you know? And the organization like that had started off in around 68, it expanded, you know, the number of cities around the country, you know, it expanded, you know, north, south, east, west, you know, and she was part of that. And as I said, you know, up to like around 70, you know, somewhere around there, 70, 71, you know, she went underground as a result of the, attacks, the ramp of attacks against the Black Panther Party. You know, in her book, you know, a lot of things that she speak about. The one thing she was talking about, you know, like, you know, the paranoia, you know, having to go here and go there, you know, and change up your whole appearance and, you know, always having to look over your shoulders at times or whatever. And she had said one time about, you know, having a phone and, you know, of course, you know, her phone bill got behind or whatnot. And she said she had noticed that her phone had rung when it should have been off. You know what I'm saying? And so she said she decided to answer. It's like, well, I'm getting some free, you know, some free minutes, you know, so to speak. And she said she picked it up and said, brother, I just told her, look, stop speaking in your phone, and hung up, you know. And that was one of the things that made her understand, like, whoa, okay, yeah, this is what it is. This is my reality. You know what I'm saying? This is my reality. You know, like we'll see. George Floyd is our reality, not Colin Powell. You know what I'm saying? Philando Castile is our reality. You know, not Clarence Thomas. You know what I'm saying? Jaheim McMillan is our reality, not Ketanji Jackson. Those are realities. You know what I'm saying? High unemployment is our reality. You know what I'm saying? The war against drugs, which is a war on African people, Black and brown people, in a larger sense, is our reality. And these same realities are the same reality that shaped her, that shaped the side of Chicot into who she became. Now, there's, you know, were, you know, there's sort of a legacy, sort of the word is, so to speak, like, you know, like the word on the streets when they talk about the formation of the Black Liberation Army, you know what I'm saying? And word is that She was just no no average Joe, so to speak, or average Joanne, as a matter of fact, right on. She wasn't just no average Joanne, you know, like we say, average Joe. She was no average Joanne when it came to the Black Liberation Army, or the formation of the Black Liberation Army. You know, word is that she had a lot of input, you know, in forming the Black Liberation Army, and it's modus operandi, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the whole philosophy of it all, you know, people make decisions. You know, we, all of us, no matter what, at some point we make decisions on our lives, on the value of it and what it means. And more times than not, of course, you know, in a society like this, the material values, you know what I'm saying? You know, when you make decisions and whatnot. But the conditions are getting so, they become really extreme. And a lot of that, you know, go out of the window, like these material values become valueless when it's been, they got so crucial that the state no longer sees you as, I graduated with a PhD with this and whatnot, you know. And this is no, like some, like lopsided attack on just those who got PhDs. And the reason why I say that, because, like, you know, there's this notion, like, you know, hood and intellectual hood and intelligence, so to speak, you know, is this stereotype, just the cardinal sort of thing. And so that's why I may begin there, like, but just try to give those of us who not really understand it, and those of us who don't want to really understand, you know. And that's why you will hear in some of the clips that have been played, where she talk about, you know, I got this, I got that, I accumulated this, and I accumulated that. So the struggle ain't my problem, you know, because I'm all right, I'm good. You know, and you know, you're separating yourself from the larger picture, you know, and it's a terrible mistake. It's a terrible mistake. You're like, you know, the genius of Huey P. Newton, you know, the founder of the Black Panther Party, when he talks about, along with Bobby Seale, you know, but when he talks about the I, my, me position, you know what I'm saying? And this is the same thing, like, for example, the I, my, me position that people like Oprah took, Jordan, T.D. Jakes, and all these other talking heads that come out of the woodwork after George Floyd, you know, because they saw something. They saw the same thing that Asada Shakur been saying. You know, they saw the same thing. They got a taste of it when Huey P. Newton was talking about the I position. It's a trap, you know, it's the wrong position to take on the chessboard. You know, Malcolm even said, you know, you knock yourself out, you know, whatever flows the boat. You know, even to the day, you know, he spoke upon those who, you know, wanted to get degrees and whatnot. What do you say? You know, okay, cool. I don't know, learn that shit. You know, bring it back to your people. Build your community up. You know, don't help the oppressor keep his feet on your people's neck. You know what I'm saying? And this is what Asada Shakur was talking about. And she finalized everything when she was saying, look, we got nothing to lose but our chains. You know what I'm saying? We got nothing to lose but our chains. When it come down to it, when we put all the cards on the table, we ain't got nothing to lose but our chains, you know. And you know, it's become a slogan with these new age present day organizations that have popped up, you know, Black Lives Matter and whatnot. You know, quoting Asada Shakur at a rally, at a speech and whatnot. You know, and we say, like, you know, We don't really quote like Dr. King and Abernathy and all of them and whatnot. You know, we don't really quote them. We quote what we think is a more, some people may consider it to be more brutal or whatnot. But the whole point is the lopsided in the Senate. So we want to bring balance to all the King quotes. That even I remember as a teenager in school and whatnot, you know, it's like, now we'll bring balance to these lopsided quotes, because the reality is material conditions that create these concrete realities that we
face collectively on the average brother and sister. And it's not this brother over here or this sister here, you know, who done made the top list and going to Washington D.C. and getting a goddamn medal or a plaque or a certificate because they were on an honor society role or whatever. You know what I'm saying? That man. Now let me be careful here, you know. But that's a whole nother thing set apart from the whole shit. And again, this setting apart to the side certain of us, and the rest of us is over here. This kind of dangerous kind of that we keep allowing to take place. This is what the side of school was talking about. And so you see people quoting her, you know. And we say, well, fine, you know, you quote the side of school right on. We keep her alive. You know, so we keep her alive. And every time she gets quoted, you know, the enemy, you know, he grits his teeth even more. You know, or we drive him into more mental derision. Right on. You know what I'm saying? But however, at the same time, we must become like a side of school. And so we must just quote a side of the school. We must become a side of the school. You know, the sister who's a quoting a side of the school at a rally must become a side of the school. And it must be a male version of a side of the school. Continuously. No excuses whatsoever. And some people, you know, use this, you know, these quotes like it's some type of fashion. You know, I was coming up with this word, fad, you know, where it was said that a lot of us was wearing Malcolm X T-shirts, Malcolm X skull caps with the X on, Malcolm X caps with the, you know, and whatnot, you know, the Malcolm jacket, and it was like a fad. But some of us wore that shit because we internalized Malcolm X. Now, I was one of those. You know, I wore that shit because I felt like Malcolm. I wanted to be like Malcolm. I wanted to think like Malcolm. And I wanted to be able to figure things out, like it was, you know, the attitude, the whole thing, because I was proud. It was strong as a young black male. And this is what we have to say about our young black girls. Our young black girls should be told about a side of school, regardless of what the state say or the claim she did, or this image they try to paint of as some monster, some cold-blooded killer, you know, or some person who had no regard for life. You know, it's bullshit. You know, our girls can be given Dorothy Height and all these other people, you know, even Shirley Chisholm. You know, can be given all these other people, Rosa Parks. I've even seen some cases where these new books, you know, these new black intellectuals, petty bourgeoisie intellectuals, make you believe that Rosa Parks was a revolutionary. You know what I'm saying? She may have done a revolutionary act, you know, a militant act, you know, by refusing to give up her seat. You know, but it's a whole nother different game. It's a process. It's an escalation thing. You know, it's going from one degree to the next. Like in Freemasonry, you know, you go from one stage that you enter as a neophyte. You know, just like in the sororities and fraternities, it's called a neophyte. They had this thing called a neophyte, you know, where they go out and, they, you know, the new girls got to get out there and they do these little things. Some of that shit might be embarrassing or something, or whatever. You know, in some cases, it would be humiliating because of the extremism that some of, you know, can go to. But you know, you start off and it's a neophyte. You won't stay there. You go past that stage. You won't stay there. And this is the same thing we say. Then we use the same idea, the same thought process, and okay, you start off here, yeah, you know, some liberalism or activism, some, right on. And that's another thing. I've seen people with the rare moments or whatever, address a side of the court or have a conversation or write a paper or essay who was an activist. I'm sorry, a side of the court was an activist. No, she's a revolutionary, straight up. She's a revolutionary. She's a revolutionary. She's an activist when she was a teenager, when she was a little girl. You know what I'm saying? And I was seeing an article. I was reading an article and I was like, man, like somebody like right on, you know, they're hitting it on, you know, like the nail on the head, so to speak. And so I was like, wait a minute, let me go back and see, you know, where is this coming from? Like, you know, who the person is writing the article? And so I look, you know, she's got an African name and everything. So I said, well, who's she writing for? So I go there and go, and I look, and I was surprised. I was surprised. It was an online Essence magazine, an online article in Essence. And I was like, whoa. You know? And I said, okay. Well, you know, the girl got it right. But yeah, we have to make sure. You know, and that's done on purpose. Do Malcolm X the same, the activist Malcolm X, he was an activist, he was a revolutionary. He went from a gangster to a revolutionary. Went from a gangster to a revolutionary. Bungie Carter went from a gangster to a revolutionary. You know, it's as simple as that. But that's who she was. You know, she was able to do some things. And he was, even brothers and contemporary with her, you know, didn't have the guts or the balls to do. You know? So our girls must be familiarized with the side of the court. In any way, shape, or form, we can make that happen. You know, in general, you know, girls, period. You know, they're giving these white women, and they're giving these white women like it ain't nothing. You know, they don't like, if it's 10 of them, we're going to give them three. We'll give them three too. You know, and we say the same thing. So it's an imbalance. There must be some balance there. And this is what part of the struggle is. This is our struggle, you know. And, you know, let me say this too, man. I forgot to say this in the beginning. We have to start late. We're a little, still a little Kool-Aid, you know what I'm saying? But we on. Things happen, and we be moving, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes these things like this may happen. But we still here, and, you know, those who listen, well, like the comment, whatever you do, press the one on your phone, you know, into the queue, and we'll put you on in the Fence of Fever Radio political education, you know, a platform. This is not CNN, this is not Fox, whatnot, this is not even Oprah, what have you. This is not Sherry that comes on in the morning, national broadcast, and whatnot, and all that shit there. You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. This is what the struggle is about. You better struggle, you better win. We know that the laws of nature are working against this government, the state. Some who may be, you know, Bible oriented, you know, may know that as, you know, there's some, yeah, brother, that man, you hitting it right on the head. Look, man, when Revelation, you know, speaks about that. You know, right on, cool, right on. I can dig it. Just not with the, you know, the, sort of like this spookism kind of like thing, you know, like a real time, like, okay, yeah, if it's a fireball, then let it be a fireball. So, like, man, this dude is speaking like really, really like grim. It was like, does, you know, some people wonder about you, you know, like, are you happy? You know, like this, you know, this dude, you know, he's probably listening now. You know, calling last week or whatever, you kind of time, and you know, I remember him saying something about complaining. You know what I'm saying? Complaining, and it's amazing how a black man can be complaining what the state is doing or the state of things under this government, but. You know, chances is he wouldn't see George Washington as complaining under the tyranny of King George, of the other George. You know, the two Georges. You know, one George versus the other George, and they were all landholders. They were all slaveholders and rapists. You know, and so we get it. We get it. We know if this is a white man, chances is a middle-aged white man. You know. Who has, of course, his position to defend, his ideology to defend, the whole shit, the whole night, his of course, his white maleness, his patriarchal position within society. We get the whole thing, but we just know better to understand that, you know, that shit works for him. It works for them, you know, and it's never worked for us. It never worked for us, and that's why a side of school was necessary. That's why the Black Panther Party was necessary. If there wouldn't have been no Governor Wallace, then there wouldn't have been no Malcolm X. He would have been irrelevant. He would have been irrelevant if this so-called Constitution or Declaration of Independence was worth the paper was written on. It wouldn't have been no Nat Turner. It wouldn't have been no Denmark Vesey. It wouldn't have been no Gabrielle Prosser. It wouldn't have been John Brown. Not John Brown. Matter of fact, it wouldn't even have been John Brown either. It wouldn't even have been him. You see what I'm saying? I was trying to think of, this brother who wrote this. It'll come to me. But David Walker. It wouldn't have been necessary for him to write David Walker's appeal. It wouldn't have been necessary. It wouldn't have been necessary. The treatment that was in the 60s, the early 70s, whatnot. If the pigs would have been doing what they was doing, terrorizing brothers, especially in places like New York, murdering them, cold-blooded murder, state-backed murder, there wouldn't have been no Black Liberation Army. There wouldn't have been none of that. So we ain't trying to hear that shit about complaining. It is what it is. We speak from a critical understanding. Some may refer to it as an analysis or whatever. Like Malcolm was, trying to get us to understand, to think critically. This is what Assata Shakur did. She thought critically. Brave. She's brave. Modern day Harriet Tubman. Underground. As a matter of fact, inspired by Harriet Tubman, that warrioress spirit. And there's nothing wrong with speaking about Assata Shakur. A Black woman who never had the taste of freedom. There's a report. There's been some times where, one or two reporters, whatever, they were allowed to be in her presence and, interview her on some things. There's even been, video, whatever, interview, And, of course, they're asking her, did you shoot up? The asinine questions, whatnot, before the record question, so to speak, the interviews, she explained her evolution, her evolution. And of course, there's some things to this day, at this point in time, that she will not divulge because she knows the viciousness of the state. She knows the jurisdiction that the people who still live in that's in this jurisdiction. She's conscious of it. She's very clear on that. Her being whisked away in 79, how long ago was that? 89, 99, 09, 19, right? Over 40 years, right? And to this day, she is aware, even though those pigs who may have been in their 40s back then, 50s or whatever, and they may be gone, but the state ain't gone, and the New Jersey pig department ain't gone. That's just like going from the old landline telephone, where the old phone you dial, with the little circle dial thing, to a push button to some little screen now. It's still the phone. So she's aware of that. She's not foolish enough to, give details, whatnot. And she understood that this COINTELPRO content intelligence program, how they ramped up things. It's like this strategy of bad jacking, so to speak. And that worked in cold blood. One or two times in the Black Liberation Movement, targeting the Black Panther Party, specifically. You know what I'm saying? And it worked. And so this portrait of her, ramped up portrait of her, and we must remember that when America goes to war, America has this so-called tendency, because it's a democracy, that it has to win the approval of the people, you know, to gain the people, gain the, you know, like I say, approval of the people. But they didn't do that shit with Iran. It was like, fuck the people. George Bush was like, fuck the people. Him, Cheney, Scumsfeld, and all the rest of them. Fuck the people. Wolfowitz, you know, Condi, Skeezer, Rice. They're like, fuck that. Fuck the people. It's about the willing. So they broke international law. They ain't go to prison. Ain't nobody go to prison. Nobody get no fucking time. Look at this thing with Donald Trump going on right now. Sheer entertainment. Sheer entertainment. Sheer entertainment. No? So it was none of that shit. No. And so they create this image of hurt. Throw this image out there of hurt. You know, there's a number of things that they did. You know, make up these stories about what she said and whatnot, you know, and all this type of shit. You know, to lure the people in, to reel them in, to reel them in. So when they murder her, in whichever which way, it could be in the most vicious manner. In the most vicious manner. And the people would feel no type of way. There were people would have no fear, and they would be numb to what took place. Like the same thing with Osama bin Laden. The same shit, the same strategy. The same strategy. You know, that's why they got an eye on this terrorism list. How does terrorism come about? As a result of 9/11 and this boogeyman shit, this Machiavellian boogeyman theory that they use, that they perfected. And so they can create the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, and other kind of shit, and then come up with the domestic terrorist watch list, and kind of, like right now today, placing certain new age Black Panther formations on a domestic terrorist watch list, certain leadership, certain individuals, certain persons, you know, there are those of us who can't catch a regular flight. There are those of us who, you know, what I mean by regular flight, you know, going to the airport and just, you know, like, you know, everybody else go through, you know, take the shit and go about it. But no, there's some of us who are on the list. And all that's fabricated, all that's needed. And so this is a similar strategy, a similar tactic to what they did inside of Shakur, you know. But Castro didn't relent. And like I said, it was a hotbed. Black Panthers who were seeing the country. There's an understanding. There's this understanding, right? When you reach a certain stage in your juxtaposition, in other words, you know, your adversarial view, your adversarial position you've taken toward the state, and it becomes severe, then, of course, there's an escalation in response, and there's this thing I heard this elder say. Said, "Well, you must understand that when you reach a certain stage, then there's a number of things that here's your options, you know, so to speak. Let me see, be thrown in prison on trumped up charges, assassinated." Chased out of the country. It was those three options. You know, those three options. And I think another one would be driven to despair, and therefore driven to suicide, driven to alcoholism or drug abuse. You know, and it is what it is. And of course, you know, you say this enough, you say these things, and it's almost like I'm sort of shoot myself in the foot in a sense, you know, so that people gravitating towards me for saying it, then they'll move away, you know, just for saying that, you know what I'm saying? And because there's this, you know, the colonized mind, who see the colonizer as their lord and master, you know, He's their abuser and he's their savior at the same time. You know, he's the descendant of the people who abused black people per se. And so therefore, he's going to be our savior. He's Leo Tolstoy, one of the greatest philosophers or thinkers, you know, European thinkers. He's saying in so many words, picture me sitting on your back. And I've been sitting on your back for a long time. And I never even gave you any consideration until just now. Until just now, I know you ripping in pain. And so what do I do? I start telling you that I'm gonna change and I'm gonna start caring about you. I care about you now. You know, I'll feed you and whatnot, you know, and so forth. I mean, after all, we all gotta eat. You know, I tell you that I care about you. I give you a program, whatever, some philanthropy, right? Still haven't gotten off your back. That's what it is. And this is where some of us is at. This is where some of us are at. And that some of us has been so-called leadership. You know, those who insert themselves into the leadership role. Those who come along, got the gift of the gab, speak real well, you know, who are given a platform. You look on CNN, you see these new young girls on CNN. You know, like a half dozen of them. MSNBC, you know, they give the, you know, the sister her little hour show, whatever, you know, right? And she's dark-skinned. And the girl on CNN is dark-skinned, too. You know, she's got a slot on CNN, you know, and whatnot. And then they'll put her on these little panel discussion shows and whatnot. You know, all that good old shit, right? You know what I'm saying? So, orchestrated up so our young girls can see them, our teenage girls can see them, you know, as models of what to be, you know, the political views, political understanding. Now they are sitting there wrangling over Donald Trump, you know, sitting over there wrangling over Donald Trump. And when Asada Shakur comes up, they quiet as mice. You know, it's avoidable. You know, it's a glass ceiling politics. You know what I'm saying? But then they can speak on George Washington. You know, they can speak on some of these liberals, you know, who practice these Machiavellian tactics against us and be right there with them. Like it ain't nothing. And that's their kryptonite. That's their mistake. No, because we going this way. The movement is to move the people in a desired manner, because power is the ability to define phenomena. Power is the ability to define the phenomena. What is that phenomena? The phenomena is a tsunami, and it has the power to destroy what's in its path. And you transform this phenomenon into the people, into the collective masses of the people. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. And to get the people to move in a desired manner. Therefore, their actions will be manifest in this desired manner. And that's their liberation, their goal. Documentaries and when they it's called Eyes on the Prize. And it's rather ironic, you know, Eyes on the Prize. Yeah. And you look at a lot of these documentaries, in the documentary, like, it's almost like dominated by civil rights movements or civil rights like type shit.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, time to time you might shift over before, like Fred Hampton and whatnot, stuff like that. But the lopsidedness, like, you know, and this is a struggle. And so that's why I say, like, sometimes, you know, we get caught up in this white man shit sometimes, you know, white man, the devil, you know, too much. And we got people, like, right in our midst, like, right in our midst, his agents, you know, his lackeys, you know, his brownies, you know, right in our midst. And he uses them like pieces on a chessboard to separate himself, to keep himself guarded from us with them. All this Asajj Shakur recognized. And you can hear us say it in the little clips. You know. And that's the brilliant part. So this is what they're still afraid of. You know. And as I said earlier, you know, some of these newer groups, you know, quoting Asajj Shakur and whatnot. You know, there's a T-shirt that I used to see like years ago, and it was a T-shirt, and it was a picture of her, like an old picture. She had her afro, her fro, right? And it had Hands Off Facade on. And when I first saw it, it's just a man, it's like, that's dope. It's a dope T-shirt. You know. And some of us mean it literally. And some of us mean that literally. You know, do a public demonstration, and it could be in the area where it's like just a mixed population. If you want to go do it in some redneck town, now you can, but just go out and do a public demonstration. Take the American flag and bring a lighter, and light it and see the response, Now I'm not telling you to do. I'm saying like it. I'm using that as an example of the response, of the feeling, of the sentiment toward that flag, that if you did that, chances are somebody might harm you physically, or at least confront you physically. You see what I'm saying? And don't let it be a ex-vet who claimed he fought to keep you safe from the terrorists. He fought in Afghanistan. He did a tour in Iraq and Afghanistan. Don't let it be one of them. But the point is what? His feelings, his sentiment toward that flag so much so that he's willing to get physical with you. You know what I'm saying? And that's what some of us mean, you know, by hands off a side. That's what she means to some of us. You know what I'm saying? That's what she means to some of us. You know, she sacrificed. What Frederick Douglass says, and I've said it before, black people want rain without thunder. We want to reap the crops and eat the food without getting our knees dirty, without touching the soil. And a lot of us do that. A lot of us want that. You know, a lot of people want to see change, but they don't want to see the change that they seek. Let me say that again. A lot of us want to see change, but they don't want to be the change that they seek. They're looking at somebody else. Like right now, we still, you know, a political prisoner. Yeah, there's been, you know, some who have won their freedom, in legal realm. But part of that has to do with America trying to reinvent itself, you know, trying to like Dennis Robbins, who just reinvent himself every now and again. You go and do some stupid shit, you know, reinvent himself, you know, stay relevant or whatnot, like some of these white people do, you know, reinvent themselves. And so that's what America does, reinvent themselves to the rest of the world. You know, they saw George Floyd, they saw that shit. They said, well, look, and there's no disrespect, this is no disregard for those who have been struggling, you know, to get these brothers, you know, home. But it's something that just occurs to me, you know, and that's because it's understanding, like, you know, from a critical perspective, like, you know, this thing, like, you know, peeling back the layers and examining each piece of the whole shit, not just looking at the picture and say, yeah, that's what it is. And you go inside the picture and just mounted the picture piece by piece and then put it back together. And he's like, whoa, I didn't see this before. And so, you know, it's these maneuvers. And so, you know, these things, you know. And, of course, part of this is to, you know, to keep trying to win black people fake back into a system, back into a broken government. That's what the Donald Trump shit is all about. That's what Donald Trump shit is all about. You know? But, man, it's been a blast, you know, to talk about this extraordinary woman, you know, black woman, you know, African woman, you know, in her 70s now, you know, and we thank the ancestors for her. We thank the God we know for her. And we should have another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and a goddamn another one. And we're going to have another show next week. Now, we're going to discuss Juneteenth. It's coming up. And put that into some type of proper perspective. So stay tuned. We thank those who've been listening. Get back with us again, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by the People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat, and the other hosts, our Minister of Defense, National Minister of Defense for the Motherland, and our coordinator, extraordinary, you know, assault technician. Sister Amina Oshun on the ones and twos. And on that note, we say black power to black people in particular, and power to the people, and you will rule. We out of here. Yo, we actually back. We started late, so that mean we still have our whole run to the 2 hours of our show. I was under the impression, you know, the same time slot that we normally do our show from 7 to 9. But we have our whole 2 hours, to my understanding. So what I'm going to do here, we'll just try to give a sort of a position on what's taking place as we speak in the news, in the media. I talked about you know, this Donald Trump shit, you know, and I was thinking about that, you know, earlier today. I saw the, you know, the online whatever little up to date little news breaks and whatnot about Trump had been arrested and all this kind of stuff, and he, you know, he pleaded not guilty to over 30 counts or whatever. And I said that, you know, this is shit entertainment. It's a dying duck that's trying to salvage itself, you know, on its last wing. And this is what we see it as. When it comes to black people, the level of confidence in the so-called government, in other words, they're trying to steer the pain at the pump, you know, away, you know, into something else. This is an old strategy. It's kind of, and of course, these people think that they're superior, you know, to the average Joe and Joanne on the streets or what have you. You know, and we're talking about, excuse me, we're talking about, we're not just talking about people, you know, who are, you know, unemployed or whatever, you know, the terminology that would be due, you know, the lumping, so to speak. you know, the proletarian or whatever, you know, working class people, or, you know, just across the board, period. You know what I'm saying? But thing to constantly rework the minds of the fooled masses. In other words, what is word that they use in private, so to speak, the sheeple. You know? In other words, like the sheep, you know, a herd of sheep, and, you know, you get the sheep to go in the desired direction. And so I haven't seen this this euphoria before Trump, which was Obama, right? And all the euphoria that came out of that. And then George Floyd. And so the effect was astronomical in the minds of black people. And you thought you had Trump, right? And so they give this impression, the Democrats, that is, give this impression that Trump has come along and now the country is spiraling to the abyss because of Trump, you know. And in the meantime, they were accusing the three countries, the three new evil axes, that strategy that they used in World War One, World War Two. You know, the evil axes in World War Two was who? The Japanese, the Italians, and the Germans, right? Hitler, Mussolini, and it was Hirohito, whatever his name was, right? The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, you know, the whole nine. You know, so the three evil axes, the big. You know, you can say it's Russia, China, and North Korea. You know, or you can say it's Russia, North Korea, and Iran, so to speak, you know. And so as a result of those things there, you know, the economy, you know, is tanking, right? And, of course, you know, as always, the legacy, the historical legacy of those who are going to feel the brunt of the blow the most will be non-whites, you know, black and brown people. Such as, for instance, you know, the COVID attack, you know, the military industrial complex's new unleashed chemical war. I mean, biological war. You know, chemical war is a war on drugs. Biological war on the nine whites of the world. You know, and so as a result of that, you know, we're losing the confidence in the system, the government. And so what better way to corral, you know, black people, nine whites, or, you know, back into the system to win, to give them one. You know, the Mexicans, the Latinos, what have you, they hate Donald Trump. Black people in general hate Donald Trump, you know, and the white liberals pretend like they hate Donald Trump and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? In the meantime, there's a whole growing mass of white people from suburbia to the trailer park trash, who's becoming fond of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has outwitted them. He's outmaneuvered them on the chessboard between the two sets of whites who are both white supremacists, straight up. You know? And so what better way to nab Donald Trump, so then they can make it look like that America is rebounding. You know, this old cliche, this old thing, you know, Americans always rebound, Americans always recover. They recover from COVID. Yeah, they recover from COVID. Of course they did. You know what I'm saying? Our objective was achieved, partial objective was achieved. You know, this Malthusian philosophy of shrinking the planet's population down, you know, population control and whatnot. from Africa to Asia to Latin America, you know, and so forth, you know, right here to the snakes. You know, and so the George Floyd thing goes down, and Donald Trump is what? And all these terms start coming out, dictator, fascist and whatnot, totalitarianism, America headed toward, these, up to these new books, these new scholars, you know, as though they've always cared, you know, writing these new books, totalitarianism and whatnot, totalitarians, dictatorship. Donald Trump this, Donald Trump that. He's being made the scapegoat, the bad guy. It's a Machiavellian strategy, Hegelian tactic. The effects is what? To win the people's faith back in the system so they can continue to contribute to their own slavery. So they can continue to stay under the rule of thumb of the white ruling class, oligarchs, oligarchy. And oligarchy is synonymous with the corporations and the government combining as one. Those who control the wealth, the 1% who control 85% of the wealth. And therefore, we're talking about a new high-tech form of sophisticated fascism. And so what way to do to paint Donald Trump as that fascist? To cover. What's the difference between Biden and Trump? A blind man can tell the difference between a jackass and an elephant. And that is the only difference. Both of them's philosophy is the same. White rule. Both of them's ideology is the same. White rule. Both of them's attitude is the same. White rule. You know that? There's a insurance commercial where they get the little black brother there on the commercial and he names the price for somebody who's 30-something. No, 60-something. $9.99. You know, then another person, another age, 20 years younger. What's your price? $9.99. Yeah, same thing. Same thing. Check their portfolios. You know, check their portfolios. When the Democrats get in office, when the Republicans get in office, or the Democrats get in office and rule shit, the Republicans are gonna be doing the same thing to them. You know, Biden's son, Hunter Biden. To my understanding, an investigation. That investigation was interrupted and thwarted by Biden himself. So what's the problem? If he ain't done nothing, like you say, you raised him well. You know, this Russian connection. It's all bullshit. But the whole purpose is to nab Donald Trump. So Donald Trump won't go get back in there and speed up their demise, speed up the rebellion that's growing. You see, in the meantime, some of us get accused of sedition, the 1619 Project. You know, this revamping of teaching American history. In the meantime, Donald Trump is saying what? Okay, well, we're going to put us, we will deal with this deep state. You know, we're going to bring the jobs back to America. We're going to bring industry back to America. You know, we're going to bring the plants back to America. Make America great again. And you got these Negroes running around here talking about, yeah, that's right. And you got some Democratic blacks who agree with Make America Great Again. Wouldn't be no problem. Wouldn't be no problem. And some of those are us who claim to be conscious. Who claim to be conscious? Who claim to be black conscious? Yeah, Make America Great. The level of confusion, but that's what that's all about. And they have to make it look really severe. They have to make it look really, really severe. And people popping champagne almost. They're spreading the word. Did you hear? Donald Trump just got arrested. And it's like, man, I can't believe it. I ain't never seen a rich white man get put in handcuffs like that. I never saw that.
But, you know, and maybe some who not old enough to remember or who don't remember, regardless of age, about Robert Madoff, how he made off with all that money. the Wall Street gang, you know, the Wall Street criminal element, which constantly steals, but they have their own word, their own term, embezzle, how they constantly loot the people, constantly. And neither one of those jackasses or elephants is throwing any of them in prison. Not even Obama. All of those dudes who looted that money should have been getting arrested. He did nothing. So Donald Trump is a distraction and a scapegoat. So they can make you think that we still got our democracy. And here's the most important factor. The people went to the voting polls and saved their democracy from going down the drain by getting Donald Trump out of there. So let's look at it. Let's look at it. Did that really happen? Let's look at it. And look at the price of the necessities of life. Take a look at it. And this is under a Democrat. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. Now, this ain't me making this up, according to their own statistics. So who's to blame? It's the Democrats that are to blame. So the Republicans going to get back in there. And then the Republicans will be to blame because the Democrats will be doing what they do. And in the meantime, those rich white men is after Russia. Whether they're Democrats, Republicans, whether it's Fox and old funny-ass Sean Hannity and that old psycho trick, Laura Ingraham, she is a psychopath on two legs. Regardless, MSNBC, the little black girl, and I get that, by the way, from Robert Mugabe. He had spoke that way about Susan Rice at the time. You know, when the Anglo-American establishment was trying to recolonize Zimbabwe in a much more sophisticated form. And so what did they do? They positioned Susan Rice. And Mugabe would get in the news, and he would say just what I said, oh, poor little black girl. And Mugabe, where she came from. And here she is, where her ancestors came from. That's where I got that from. You know, but those are facts. I don't have to make this shit up. I have to make it up at all. Just check their portfolios. In the meantime, the people are suffering. White ruling class, constant drive for natural resources to dominate the earth. You know, that's what that Russia shit's all about. Ukraine. That's what that's all about.
In a nutshell, NATO expanding eastward. North Atlantic Treaty Organization, that's what it stands for. So if you look at a map of the Atlantic Ocean, you see to the left America, you see to the right the European countries will form themselves into the European Union. At the behest of one Joseph Redinger in the 50s. So it's been planned. And of course, why? Because the minorities on earth could protect themselves into the future, could safeguard their position once they got into the position that the ambitions would drum up for the future. And then they protect their assets. And that's what it's all about. And Russia is the dominant country right now when it comes to oil reserves. And so they're trying to figure out how they can take Russia down. Oh, I know how. Shit, we put Ukraine right there. It's the same Machiavellian strategy. And then you're throwing Donald Trump. Trump and Putin. Totalitarianism. Because they know that the people in this country somehow, some way is getting it. But they got to go through a cataclysm. They got to be driven to despair. In the meantime, the young people on the street in these majority black regions, these colonies that the peers occupy, are being scapegoated as America's problems as far as societal woes go. Because they see them as useless eaters. They see them as extremely bendable. And they see that as part of the Malthusian philosophy of planet depopulation. And of course, from a revolutionary perspective, black-on-black crime is a necessary political tool to prevent the revolutionary transformation of society. Let me say that again. Black-on-black crime is a necessary tool to prevent the revolutionary transformation of society. In a nutshell. So, you know, there are those who are there. funny little thing. Getting their panties in a bundle over this Donald Trump shit. From a biblical perspective, those of us who are feeling the brunt of the blow, politically, economically, socially, we'd be wise in getting out of the way. You know? From that fireball from the sky. And that's pretty much it. And of course, you know, it is too, what a coincidence. You know, the judge that, whose chambers this show is taking place, this will happen to be a Trump appointee. And now the liberals are crying foul. The liberals are crying foul. You know, all of these talking head, big time law experts, legal experts, and one of them had the nerve to take part in a team of experts and writing a letter seeking the judge to recuse herself. You know, these ethics champions, these ethics experts, you know, these ones who the American people are supposed to see as august, you know. These are our ethics leaders. These are the ones who pontificate ethics to the American masses and therefore project it internationally, right? And one of these had the nerve enough to have the position that the other two or three had under their president. One had this position under Obama, and this other one had the nerve enough to claim ethics, and he served under George Bush. It is amazing. It is amazing. And, you know, sometimes you'd like to confront people like that. Sometimes you'd like to catch them at the right time and the right place and lead by example. Because observation breeds participation. And the people will be able to catch on. And that's what is, you know, making a contribution to the struggle. Advancing it. You know, advancing the struggle from one stage to the next. And this is historical, you know. This is historical. They're all hypocrites. But the one thing, clearly understand that my people can someday fully understand. No matter what the jackass say about the elephant, or what the elephant say about the jackass, or no matter if the jackass fell upon the elephant from behind and started gnawing on the back of his leg, or the elephant catches the jackass what they call unawares and smacks the shit out of him with the trunk, and he cried foul. No matter that, the one thing that the jackass and the elephant will do, if an external force enters the arena, and it don't necessarily have to be like an external force, like from a, you know, another country. I you know, it can be right here. They can call you an external force right here, black and brown people. They'll band together in the flesh quicker than you can blink your eye. Now, they've shown that internationally. I mean, it went on and on and on and on and on and on and on. You had Clinton, gangster Clinton on one side, Obama, then you had McCain, and all these other Republicans on the other side. And they just went one after the next. Even in entertainment with Biden and Trump, the debates that are prearranged. These debates that are prearranged. And you know, and people, they get off on how Trump is attacking Biden. So we're at the end of the rope. No, we say you hear what? Black Power.